Welcome to Parents Perspective. And now for a special report, the radio announcer intoned from the shelf over Sheila's kitchen sink. The State Public Health Service has just issued a bulletin warning that fresh strawberries from Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina might carry a potentially toxic type of bacteria, particularly harmful to children. Parents are advised to thoroughly wash any strawberries from these three states. Oh, swell. Sheila opened the refrigerator and eyed a bright plastic bowl of fresh strawberries. I don't know where these are from. Why didn't they find this out yesterday? And she dumped the strawberries into the garbage. Mommy! 3-year-old Mandy came waddling in with her favorite doll in her arms. See the baby eating strawberries just like me? She grinned, her mouth and her doll streaked scarlet with strawberry juice. Oh, no! Wailed Sheila, grabbing the doll in one hand, Mandy in the other, and scanning her bulletin board for the poison control number. Now what do I do? From a parent's perspective, what should we know and what can we do about environmental hazards for our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we're privileged to talk with an expert in environmental health matters. Dr. Jerome A. Paulson is Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences and Associate Professor of Prevention and Community Health at the GW School of Public Health and Health Services. He is one of the co-directors of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment. Providing patient care to a diverse group of children and families, Dr. Paulson has focused on the delivery of primary and preventive healthcare services to children, and more recently on children's environmental health. Dr. Paulson is a father and a grandfather. Welcome to Parents Perspective.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here on Parents Perspective today.
Dr. Paulson, your concern is how our environment can adversely affect our children. Why are kids at greater risk than adults?
Kids are different than adults. And on the one hand, that may seem self-evident to those of us who are parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles, because all you have to do is look at a child and say, that child's not an adult. But it's also important to recognize that that child is not just a small adult. She or he is very different in terms of how their bodies work and how they interact with the environment that they're in.
Children are smaller. Children have less developed aspects of their bodies than adults. Does this mean that things that happen in the environment have a much greater effect on them, or they're just more sensitive to more things?
The fact that children are smaller certainly makes a difference in both how they interact with their environment and how their environment affects them. Also, different processes in their bodies are different than those in the adult. For example, children breathe faster than an adult does. And so if there's pollution in the air, that child is going to breathe in more of that pollution than an adult will. Think about an adult and a child walking down the street and the city bus goes by or the school bus goes by. And usually the exhaust from that bus comes out at the bottom of the bus. Where's the parent's nose? Where's the child's nose? And who gets the bigger snootful of that stuff that's coming out from the bottom of that bus? The liver is part of the body that detoxifies a lot of chemicals that come into the body. The liver functions differently in a child than it does in adults. The kidneys are responsible for excreting a lot of things from the body. The kidneys work differently in children than they do in adults. Anybody who's had a toddler knows that toddlers don't eat the way adults do. First of all, even if you think about newborn babies, they're being breastfed or they're taking formula. That's all that they eat. Whereas adults hopefully eat a lot of complex carbohydrates, and they eat vegetables, and they eat fruits, and some protein, and not very much sugar, if you think about the food pyramid we're all supposed to follow. If that breast milk or if that formula is contaminated, then that's all the child's eating, and they're getting a lot of whatever that contaminant may be. Toddlers will eat peas 1 week and no carrots, and the next week they'll eat carrots and no peas. And they don't have the same kind of variety that an adult does. A teenager doesn't eat like an adult either, for that matter. And so again, with their very selective diets, if what they are eating is contaminated, that contaminant may not be diluted out with all the other variety of foods that an adult might eat, because the kids are eating in a very selective manner. So there are a lot of different ways that kids differ from adults in terms of how their bodies function and how they interact with their environment.
You mentioned that a child's liver and kidneys work differently than adults do. Does that mean that it takes longer to detoxify the body than for adults, or is it slower, or how is it different?
The answer to the question varies a little bit with the specific age of the child and whether you're talking about the liver or the kidneys. But one example is there are certain enzymes, certain chemicals in the liver that are used to detoxify certain kinds of chemicals that may come in from outside of the body. In adults, the more you're exposed to the outside chemicals, the more of those detoxifying enzymes that your body makes. So your body can kind of keep up with increasing exposure. The enzyme is called inducible. You can stimulate the body to make more. In children, that same enzyme is not inducible. So at some point, you can potentially overwhelm the body's ability to detoxify, because as you add more and more things from outside the body doesn't make more and more enzyme, and there's a limit to how much it can detoxify over time. So that's just one example of how things are different.
Are there other ways that children's bodies function differently?
We talked about kids breathing more. We talked about differences in eating patterns. Children drink more per pound of body weight than an adult does. So again, if what they're drinking is contaminated, then they get a higher dose of that contaminant. Think of the baby who's 7, 8 months old, starting to crawl, and then somewhere around a year of age, pulling up to stand, starting to walk. But even as the kids go through the next couple of years, they still spend a tremendous amount of time sitting on rugs, sitting on grass, rolling in the dirt in the backyard. These are all things, crawling, sitting on grass, rolling in grass, rolling on the carpets, that adults don't do.
Most of the ones we know, anyway.
Most of the time. I mean, you know, we go sit.
Unless they've paid a whole lot of money to put on helmets and do it.
Right. Or, you know, they're going to listen to a concert and we sit on the grass. Sure. But suppose somebody has put fertilizer or pesticide on the grass. Suppose somebody has put pesticide down in a room. And all that stuff is now on the carpet if it's in a room, or it's on the grass if it's in the yard. An adult is going to walk across that carpet, usually with her shoes on or his shoes on. So we've got leather or rubber or whatever between our bodies and the pesticide. And even if we walk across it in our bare feet, that's a relatively small surface area, if you will, compared to the child who's maybe got a short sleeve shirt and short pants on, who's rolling across that lawn, not only exposing the soles of their feet, but their arms and their legs, and if they've got their shirt off, and then their chest and back. So again, it's different ways of contacting the environment, if you will. And so we have to think about this not only as parents wanting to protect our kids in our own home or where they go to play in the park or where they may go to school, but we also have to think about this from the standpoint of how the environment is regulated by corporations and the government. Do those groups, the corporations and the government, take these special differences of children into account when they make plans or when they carry out plans, for example, for spreading a pesticide or a weed killer on the ground in the park, and then the kids come the next day and play in that park. Or when they release things from their factory via their smokestacks or their wastewater into the air that kids breathe, and again, if they breathe more rapidly than adults do, or into the water where the kids may play in a stream.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of children's health and the environment with Dr. Jerry Paulson.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Jerry Paulson about children's health and the environment.
I have a real situation. This is a family that came to me with questions about their children's health. There were, at the time I met them, there was a boy and girl set of twins who were about 14 years old, and a younger brother who at the time I met them was about 7. But the issues went back to when the youngest child was 2 or 3. This family lives in a part of the country that's pretty urbanized, but for just peculiarities related to when their home was built and where it was built, they happen to be on well water. And there are two streams that run across their property from adjacent properties, which happen to be military bases. Somewhere around the time that the younger child was a toddler, they noticed that the water from their well didn't taste quite right, and the water in the streams looked funny. They didn't know what it meant. They didn't know what this was all about. But they subsequently had the water analyzed, and it became very clear that there were chemicals that were running down from these two military bases into the streams and into the well water. Chemicals that were used as solvents, chemicals that were used as explosives, some chemicals that are called heavy metals, and all of these things were in the water that the family was drinking, the water that the family was bathing in. And if you think about taking a shower, not only are you getting exposure to your skin, but as the mirrors get steamed up in the bathroom and you see that fog in the bathroom, you're also breathing in that water. So it's going into your lungs. So they were getting exposed through their mouth and their stomach and their intestines. They were getting exposed through their skin as they bathed in the water. And at least for a while the kids were still playing in these streams until the parents sort of realized this isn't such a good idea. And then they were also breathing this in terms of water from the shower. So even living in a relatively affluent part of the country, in a relatively urbanized part of the country, they came into contact with these toxicants, and the fact that their children's bodies were different than the adults, and the adults had the exposures too, but the kids' exposures were different than those of the adults. Thankfully, when I saw the children, I could not find that any injury had occurred, but as parents, we all know that whatever happens to those kids for the rest of their lives, if they get sick, somebody is going to think back, does this relate to the chemical exposures that they had as toddlers?
In that line with the example of the kids before us, what kinds of symptoms would kids display if they were affected by environmental toxins?
It's going to vary, obviously, depending upon what they're exposed to. And most of the time, the symptoms aren't very specific to enable one to say that, yes, this is coming from the environment. For example, kids who have asthma may wheeze more because of exposure to particulate matter that's coming out of, we mentioned the bus before, and we can all see that particulate matter that comes out of the exhaust pipes of the big trucks and the buses. interestingly enough, what we can see is probably not the dangerous part, because those particles are so big we can see them. They're also so big that our nose does a pretty reasonable job of filtering them out, and they don't get down into the lungs. It's the particles that are so small that you can't see them that get into the lungs. So children may wheeze as a result of exposure to air pollution and the particulate matter. They may also wheeze as a result of exposure to ozone, which is another constituent of air pollution. Depending upon where you live in the United States or around the world, your weather reporter may, particularly in the spring and summer, say that this is a yellow air quality day or a red air quality day, and particularly on code red days, they've talked about children and adults with lung problems, be it asthma in kids or asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or emphysema in adults, not going outside because the air pollution can make their symptoms worse. So that's another way that kids can get symptoms. One of the more common toxicants that children come into contact with is lead. Now, interestingly enough, until lead levels in the body get up to be very, very high, there is no symptom whatsoever that anybody is going to be able to notice. And what this speaks to then is we have to do things to prevent the lead poisoning before it ever occurs. Because if you wait until a child has become symptomatic, or even if you draw blood from children who have no symptoms and identify them as having elevated lead levels, the damage may have already been done to that child without them exhibiting any symptoms whatsoever. So we have to be careful. We have to take precautions and try and prevent many of these exposures, because waiting for symptoms to develop is too late.
And parents are thinking to themselves, okay, now what kinds of things can we do to prevent these exposures, besides keeping our children locked up in a little room in a plastic bag?
Well, the plastic bag part wouldn't may not be a good idea either. For example, if parents live in a home built prior to 1950, then almost certainly somewhere in that home there is lead paint. If the lead paint is in good shape, it's not flaking, it's not chipping, and they're not doing any restoration that's going to disturb that paint, then their kids are probably actually fairly safe and not likely to have problems with the lead paint. On the other hand, if the paint is flaking or chipping, or if they're considering doing restoration that's going to involve sanding or burning or breaking down walls or things like that, then in the restoration situation, they shouldn't do that, because that creates the lead dust and exposes their kids and their dogs. And another sort of interesting story is that a very famous dog, and I won't mention names or places, but think back 10 or 12 years, a very famous dog who lived in a very famous house in the United States became lead poisoned when they were doing rehabilitation in that house, because dogs walk through the dust and then they lick their paws. Well, kids crawl on the floor and they put their hands in their mouth, or they put their toys in their mouth. And so even if there's microscopic particles of dust from the lead paint, nothing that anybody would see and nothing that anybody would think about, they're not being a bad housekeeper because they haven't dusted enough, the kids can get exposed to lead. So you have to think preventively. In that instance, if you do live in an old house and there is flaking and chipping paint, one of the things you can certainly do before you have time to figure out whether the paint has lead in it or not is just wash your kids' hands a lot and wash their toys a lot. For kids who play outside where you don't know what might be on the lawn or what might be in the playground, wash their hands when they come back in before they eat. Make sure that they get a chance to wash their hands before they do other things that are going to result in objects being placed in their mouths. It's one of the few things that parents can actually do with their children to make their children safer is wash their hands. So what everybody learned from their mothers and grandmothers turns out to be true. Mm-hmm. Washing your hands is good and important.
Second only to chicken soup.
Right? Yeah, probably true.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of children's health and the environment.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Paulson about children's health and the environment. Wouldn't asbestos be something else you'd find in older homes?
Asbestos is something that certainly can be in older homes, and the other place where parents sometimes end up worrying about asbestos is when it's been used in schools. Asbestos, in many ways, is like lead paint. If it's in good shape, if it's intact, it's not going to cause problems for people. Asbestos that's still in a solid state, if you will, wrapped around a pipe, doesn't cause problems. It's when that asbestos starts to break down, either as a result of a water leak from the pipe or somebody banged into the pipe with a ladder or a hammer, or they're starting to take the pipes apart and they're not careful with the asbestos that's around the pipes. That's when the asbestos gets into the air, and when it's breathed into the lungs, that's when the asbestos causes problems. Asbestos solidly around a pipe in good shape presents very little risk to anybody.
As parents, are there certain things, Dr. Paulson, we should be lobbying for to increase our children's environmental safety?
Parents should lobby for increased funds for research in environmental health, and they should ask that their state environmental agencies and the Federal Environmental Protection Agency take the special needs of children that we discussed earlier into account when they make their rules and regulations. If they make rules and regulations that are designed to protect adults, they may not be protective of children. So they really need to consider those special needs of children. And unless the government agencies at the state or the federal level hear that from concerned parents, they aren't going to do that.
Okay, everybody out there, got your marching orders?
We know many of our listeners are going to want to look into a lot of these issues further. Could you make some suggestions for resources?
One resource that's available to parents, the Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Units, which go by the initials PEHSU. The PEHSU, PEHSU. The PEHSU's, there's one Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Unit in each of the 10 regions of the United States that the federal government divides the country into. And if parents go to www.AOEC/PESU, they will find a list of all the pediatric environmental health specialty units around the country. All of the pediatric environmental health specialty units have toll-free numbers, and they are set up specifically to answer questions from physicians, nurses, public health officials, school officials, and parents. So anybody in the United States can call their regional pediatric environmental health specialty unit and ask any question about a known exposure, a suspected exposure, a child who's got an illness that they think may be the result of an exposure. And those of us who work in the pediatric environmental health specialty units, and you mentioned the Mid-Atlantic Center that I'm affiliated with, that's the Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Unit for the Mid-Atlantic states. Our job basically is to answer questions that people have. So that's an excellent resource for parents. Another two excellent resources are resources from the federal government. One is the Environmental Protection Agency, www.epa.gov, and they have an excellent website with information about all sorts of issues, whether it's water pollution, air pollution, asbestos, lead, any pesticides, any of the topics that we've touched on today. Parents can find information on their website. And the second federal agency and the third website that I would recommend to parents is a federal agency with a very long name. It's the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which goes by the much shorter set of initials, ATSDR. This is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, and their website is www.atsdr.cdc.gov. On the ATSDR website, parents will find very extensive compilations of information about specific chemicals. And this is some of the best information anywhere in the world about the hazards of these specific chemicals. And it's available at the click of a mouse for free. Anybody can look at it. And again, then if they need to, they can call the Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Units and get some questions answered.
Well, Dr. Jerry Paulson, you have answered a lot of our questions. I know our listeners are having lots more questions, so these are very good sites to go to. So thank you so much for being with us today.
It's really been my pleasure. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 181. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, our books, are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.